The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on June 12, 2001, in Wicklow, Ireland.
So, I have a subject for today, although I didn't work it into a careful outline, but I wanted to talk about the guru-disciple relationship. Which is mentioned a lot in Prabhupada's books. Remember when, after Prabhupada passed away, and then ISKCON started to function with gurus, myself, I used to talk about this subject a lot. Partly it was because I was groping to understand it and how it fit in with our relationship with our founder Acharya Prabhupada and with my own understanding of my lack of perfection, and yet my desire to want to do this and convince the disciples that we were bona fide. So it seemed to be a topic that we couldn't get off. It was a relief when we did get off it sometimes. And then so many things happened with our overdoing relationship of the next generation of gurus, so that Prabhupada had to reassert Prabhupada's place as the founder of Acharya Guru for all the disciples in Hare Krishna movement. Fortunately, during those years, I was at least partly protected from any kind of abuses by the fact that I was compiling the Prabhupada Lilamrita. That made me feel very close to him and tracking his activities. So, as a way of entry into this subject, I have a letter. This is actually a letter that I wrote to a disciple, but it refers to a letter that she wrote. Her name is Ramila. There was one thing you said which particularly struck me and set me thinking. You described Tamal Krishna Maharaj's visit, and you said, "I was impressed how TKG gave himself to his disciples. I felt he had imbibed the factual realization that his source of spiritual strength is obtained by being a recipient of the mercy, love, and well-wishing prayers of his disciples." And then I say, "Is this something that he himself said or that you realized?" So I go on to say that here she's implying that it's certainly all right for the guru to receive all this love and good wishes and adulation from his disciples. And I point out that we have to be careful about this, that it not be overdone. If the guru invites that his disciples should adore him and that he's a that kind of figure in exchange of love, it could lead to excess. It could lead to a wrong kind of love. And then I say, not only do disciples bring love to the spiritual master, they bring in their prayers, but they bring their troubles. And this is dangerous also for the guru if he's taking on all the sinful activities or trouble of the disciples. Then I go back to her statement about how she saw Tamal Krishna Maharaj acting. "But the way you stated so confidently, I felt he had imbibed the factual realization that his source of spiritual strength is obtained by being the recipient of mercy, love, and well-wishing prayers of the disciples. I don't think I ever thought of it that way. We think of the guru as giving daya, mercy to the disciples, because he's in a superior position. Disciple, we think, cannot give daya or mercy. He's in the inferior position. And I had just heard Prabhupada say that in a lecture, he gave the example of a hospital. Maybe a little imperfect, a crude example, but the idea is the patients, they can't give the mercy to the doctors and nurses. They're getting the mercy from the people in the superior position. All they can give is seva, the person in the subordinate position. But here, she had described a reverse situation. But I say, what you said is also true. Well, we ask, why can't it be true? Why can't the spiritual master open himself and allow the love that they're giving to him to enter his heart, to massage his heart, to ease his days? Thus he will be inspired to reciprocate. Then
she wrote me back again and said in a rather blunt way, have you ever felt that you are the recipient of, that you have been nourished by the prayers and good feelings of your disciples? And I felt, how could I possibly say no? Would that be an ingrate? I have a stone heart and think, no, I don't get anything out of this relationship. I'm just giving everything to them. But I said, this is especially, I immediately acknowledge this as true and feel grateful in very tangible ways that my disciples are taking my raw writings and editing them and printing them into books and distributing them, and that if I want to travel, they're paying for my travel, and anything I want to do in honoring this relationship. But in terms of the mystical exchanges, like they're praying to God for my well-being, it's hard for me to understand things like that. Even when in Prabhupada's last weeks, he allowed us to make a prayer, my dear Lord Krishna, if you desire, please cure Srila Prabhupada. And we prayed it and prayed it and prayed it, but Prabhupada, the Krishna, he had his own mind, and he didn't quote cure, unquote, Prabhupada, but took him back. Although on other occasions he did say that his disciples' prayers had saved him. But this is a mysterious, to me, region. But certainly a nice one to think about, a nice one to explore. It's a different kind of relationship. In the West, really not known so much to people, although the guru word has been used to death. There's all kinds of gurus for everything. But it's been abused, and it's not truly known so much in religion. It's very important in Krishna consciousness. I would like to read another letter. You can make note of that topic and then ask me some questions about it at the end of this talk. Also, tomorrow I'll talk.
But also I have a film to show, about 20 minutes of my artwork. And then on the last day, what I'd like to do is have different questions. If you've been to any of my classes where I have extended classes, I'd like to use the last one to answer one question after another on varied topics, but I'd like to have them in advance, a little piece of paper, so I can think about it and choose which ones I want to use. So if you can, starting right away, any questions you have, you can write down and give to me, and then on the last day, I'd like to answer them. So here's another
thing about the guru-disciple relationship. I think you usually say in any relationship it's a two-way thing, husband and wife, or friends. So the guru-discipleship is like that too. And in this matter we just thought the guru, he is the medium of Krishna's blessings to the disciples. But they're getting him something back. They're getting him seva. And he's described as a parent who has to see to their upbringing properly. But they can be reciprocating in many ways on his behalf, even spiritually. Prabhupada writes in one purport that
a disciple can even make such spiritual advancement that he's more advanced than the guru, and on the strength of this disciple, the guru goes back to Godhead. And some of you may have remembered reading that in Prabhupada's purport. And then he just suddenly, in the midst of the purport, he spoke very personally, and he said for himself, he said, "I think that I'm very crippled and unqualified, but I think sometimes that if one of my disciples becomes advanced like Dhruva Maharaj, then I may be carried back to Godhead." So even that's a hope
on the sincere but
limited spiritual master, and they have a brilliant student. I recently saw a film of the Mahabharata, and that was there in the warrior guru relationship of Drona. He had so many best students, and Arjuna was the best student of all, affectionately, and in terms of brilliance of archery. And so they actually came to fight each other. And Arjuna asked permission to kill him. So here's another topic of guru-disciple relationship. One area you wanted me to comment on in your last two letters is based on a comment I made about my having a slightly different response to Srila Prabhupada's instructions. So to start with, this is a recognition that we're all in the Hare Krishna movement for ISKCON. We're formed very much by the understanding of Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada is giving us. So that phrase was enunciated by the GBC that Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha Guru. I've been looking again at Shivaram Maharaj's book, The Shiksha Guru. He makes the point that in all gurus, their main character is that they give shiksha, and the diksha guru, he's usually the one who gives you the most shiksha.
But in a special kind of category is the founder acharya, who defines everything we do in Krishna consciousness, and especially for us the scriptures that we read come in the form of the Prabhupada, the Bhaktivedanta purports. And so on. Everything is traceable to him. So he's saying that although he's my disciple, he can look with his own direct eyes at Prabhupada and be inspired by different things Prabhupada is doing. Well, anybody now and in the future generations, they can read Prabhupada's letters and Prabhupada's books and understand them with their own intelligence and follow. So he's saying, to some degree, he sees some things that Prabhupada does, and he responds to them differently than I do. You mentioned in your last letter, or rather he said, yeah, a slight different response. You mentioned in your last letter that we are at different stages in our lives in Krishna consciousness. This is time. No, excuse me, this is true. We have different emphases at this point. I was explaining one reason we might be doing things differently. is that I'm a sannyasi and I'm 61 years old, and you may be a Grihastha or a Mataji, very young, so to expect that your activities to match up to mine exactly, just for these external reasons, it wouldn't. I may have done certain things when I was your age that you're doing now, that doesn't mean I'm different. I think I can say in the area of the individual and the institution, I may not always row in with you. I think it would be correct to say you really respect and honor both, but that you lean more for the individual. So do I, but in certain instances, rightly or wrongly, I have been in management for so many years of late, I sometimes favor more institutional leanings. So do you. But it is a question of degree. As examples, there would be the areas of dovetailing, of finding your own level, doing the needful. There's a balance in all of these things. Srila Prabhupada spans the spectrum. We both respect both, individual and institution. You much more than me in both. It's true that but I myself, as years have gone by, I've definitely come more and more to favor and to want to speak up for the individual in Krishna consciousness. When I was quite young in Krishna consciousness, I enunciated more that the institution, or on a small level, a temple, and you had to just do what the authorities in your temple told you. An example just comes to my mind when I was a temple president in Boston. We decided that if we had this japa hour, and the devotees, they would tend to space out and wander around in that time and not paid. We thought a good way to remedy it was to make it mandatory that everyone had to stay in the temple room during japa. And just to make sure that about that, we posted a man at the door counting that no one would try to climb out the window.
And I still remember one young woman, she had enough and she was going to the door. She wanted to get out, and the man wouldn't let her get out. And then, like a big scene, and right on the spot, she screamed and left Krishna consciousness. So, but I thought he had acted right and are trying to keep everyone in the temple room. So that's an extreme of the institution over the individual. No flexibility. The study of the former gives you slightly more energy in the individual, whereas I think the study of the latter absorbs me more. Of course, both are interdependent. Does the above explain how I am thinking? Is this okay for me to think like this? I think it has to do more with the application of Krishna consciousness than the philosophy. Can the disciple have different views on this? Can it be an area of discussion? So we're discussing it. I would like to think that a disciple was so carefully following the career and the nature of his spiritual master that he would even notice what I said, that my spiritual master, who used to be more absorbed in institutional direction, and now he seems to be an individual, so that he would not have a short view of thinking that the spiritual master is lacking now, and that he would draw inspiration from him in whatever he was doing, and even if it was a different kind of service. For example, say book distribution is a service that it's a front-line service, and it seems to also require a kind of consciousness of the persons that they're doing a front-line service, that it's that it's elite, and that they have to have this fighting spirit. So I have some disciples who are book distributors, and if they express that they feel close to me, or that the things I write are encouraging to them, I am encouraged by that, because it cuts across the lines of particular service. And I mentioned book distribution, but any service. In other words, it's not like Drona, that he has to be a warrior spiritual master and you're a warrior disciple. But this is spiritual. And if he's your spiritual master, he should inspire you in whatever it is you're doing. For example, I often give Bhakti Rasa as an example of a good disciple. And now he's in a position of being a temple manager, temple president, that means manager, of a small temple in a rough city. And the mind is filled with how to keep that place going, but at the same time he's affectionate disciple. Not that he's thinking, why doesn't my spiritual master help me more with how to develop community, how to do this, how to do that. But you get the inspiration, and then you serve Prabhupada. So I'm responding to this letter. I think that in writing the letter, he hasn't emphasized rightly. He's asking more for permission to be independent from his spiritual master and liking something different. Why not take the example I gave of seeing himself inspired by his spiritual master? There was one devotee who used to really want to ask about this question. It seemed to come up to his mind a great deal, and he would say different forms of it, like, well, if the spiritual master likes Rasrula, and you don't like Rasrula, are you supposed to like that kind of sweet exactly? Because some of the disciples, they make it seem like you have to, but I don't like them. And of course, you don't have to like the same sweet that he likes. But the more we can see things in a positive way, the better. It's meant to be an affectionate relationship, and not a forced one. Okay, another guru disciple topic. Thank you very much for your association through writing. I meditate on your words and instructions. I wanted to write in a way to enliven you. So many times, on some of your older tapes, you talk about how devotees wrote Prabhupada with so many problems. And I don't want to do that. I read that the disciple should also enliven the spiritual master, as well as the spiritual master enliven the disciple. That's again like the topic of the first letter, of the love coming from the disciple, not just that the disciple is a mercy case, as we say, requiring first aid, requiring nourishment, and the guru is educating him, helping, but he's also spiritually healthy and loving, and his growth is enlivening the spiritual master. So he likes to report in a letter like that. Prabhupada used to say at one point, there's so many things that early in the movement he wrote in a letter. He said, he was dictating a letter. He said, I get a letter from Brahmananda, so many problems. So then I get a letter from Gargamuni, and it's filled with so many problems. He said, if I have to hear problems from all those different devotees, then who will solve my problems? And then toward the end, he said, his secretary would come in with the mail, and he would say, bring me good news. And just did want to hear something else. But it's not a fact that all the news is good. But it's nice when some of it is. And one shouldn't remain silent because you don't have good news. If you need help, then you should get it to write. When did I start talking? Okay. You generate any questions yet?
Yeah. Hearing you talk about it, it's connecting with something that's been on my mind as well for the last few days. And you were describing in the beginning of your talk about how you yourself as a spiritual master, you went through different stages, speaking about how in the beginning when you first took up the service you would often be speaking, preaching to the devotees about the Guru disciple relationship, and that sometimes you would feel relief when you could get away from that and talk about something else. And thinking about myself as a disciple and also observing other devotees of the disciples, you might start off in the relationship of a disciple in a particular way, according to your age or according to your service or the level you are in Krishna consciousness. But due to the influence of time and how it works on us, and also the influence of Krishna consciousness, we found out how that works and if it's a good thing with it. Where we ended in the present time might be completely different from where we started out from in terms of power and situation. So the guru can be going through different evolutions, and also the disciple can be going through different evolutions both spiritually and materially. And I was wondering if you could say what are the essential elements in the relationship with the guru and the disciple which can help them to survive the ravages of time.
Well, there are some things that don't change. I remember at a point when ISKCON seemed to be changing and being threatened by lots of changes, even in the guru-disciple relationship, they say, oh, did you hear this? It's going to be a meeting. They're going to redefine the relationship. We're not actually the disciples of our gurus or this or that. This may be changed, that may be changed. And sometimes I would hear these things and get worried, well, what is there that's steady that won't change? And of course, I thought of things like that. That I, chanting the names of Hare Krishna mantra is my method of connecting with Krishna. And Prabhupada is my spiritual master. So there are things that are unchanging. That will survive those ravages of change. And it's good if the spiritual master goes through the changes with you. I remember, speak personally, I was staying in our van at a place you called the Newcastle Farm for a while. And you were coming out, and sometimes Dhananjaya was coming out bringing us prasadam. So you and I would go for a walk and chant and walk for a while, and you brought up that you were thinking whether or not you needed to get married, and rather than just tell you yes you must do this, yes you must do that, I tried to listen and sensitively guide you. But it did seem that it would be best if you considered that you ought to get married eventually. So that was an example of being there with you when you went through a change. And I think the more we can go through those changes, better. And as a spiritual master, if it's a personal relationship and he admits, well, I'm in a different situation now, just like I am, I'm living alone, and I'm writing, I'm not doing apparently much outward travel or preaching, but I expect you to understand this is a change, which is a good change, a good position that I'm in, but to be compassionate in any way that would help you to understand me rightly. So your question is, how can we our relationship overcome the ravages of time with by love and keeping Krishna and Prabhupada in the center? Then all these other things, they're temporary. We just kind of laugh at them when we see each other, and our bodies may be growing older and certain things are different in our situation, but we know that these are not the real changes. These are not the real essence. In the case of Prabhupada, he's even, like we say, he's left. We can't find him like we used to. But still the relationship goes on. It's so much survived the time that although he appears to have been died, he is still, he lives forever in his instructions. Another thing that can be construed from your question is, what about when the disciple gets more advanced and he wants to be ready to hear higher topics in Krishna consciousness and not just the ones that he first did? Then also, the spiritual master will be able to see if that is true and help him to understand higher topics. Is that all right? No.
As you were talking about the guru-disciple relationship, as over the past couple of days, we've kind of been getting closer to coming over, I was thinking, what's going to happen, and what's going to be said, and what exchange is going to be had, things like that. And I was thinking about how everyone, how it would be nice to be close to you while you're here. And also for, even when we go away as well, it would be nice to keep that. And hearing you talk, it reminds me of when you wrote to me a letter and you said, our ability to be close to something like that is dependent on your own internal practices and Krishna consciousness.
Mm.
It's something that I've been going through recently about how, if I want to be close to you, then it really is important for me to kind of get stuck into chanting around and being close to that. And in that way, it enables me to be close to you, which I felt related to all the different topics and whatever we're changing, different instructions and different whatever it is. That was just one something I've been thinking about recently.
I heard Prabhupada answering questions to reporters in Australia in 1974, and I remember that one of them, he was in disguise, he was actually a Guru Maharajji follower. leave it to them to do something sneaky like that. And Prabhupada was telling him at one point that if you're sinful, you can't know God. So then he said what the four sins are. And like the Guru Maharaj, people might say that you could see God by a shortcut. But we say that this qualification must be there. So the same is true. You can't cheat the spiritual master. But and Krishna, the more you actually line up with their the basic instructions, then by their purity, you'll be close. The closeness is not something else. It's not physical proximity. But you feel good when you have in physical proximity again after you have been rightly following. Or it may be that you feel guilty that you haven't been rightly following, but by meeting the spiritual master, you feel a new determination. In either case, a tight, strong relationship is based on your following the basic principles. I wasn't surprised to see you because some devotees, Bhakti Ras told me that you live near the manor now. Oh. Tell me what you're doing there. Any ladies want to say something? What he would consider good news?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess you summed it up. Preaching activities and our own personal testimony about how nice the practices are of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada being such a great world preacher, he liked to hear, you know, that we just held Rath Yatra and we distributed books. People are coming to the temple, and some professor said this about your books, and he would really be so pleased because his Guru Maharaj wanted to see Krishna consciousness spread. And Prabhupada was the actual medium, the first person to do it. So when his disciples did it, he was pleased with them. And but also sometimes he could respond to just some simple thing. Maybe a devotee enclosed a picture of their Jagannath deities, and he would become so moved by the way they had decorated them that he would be very pleased by that news. And of course it would be the absence of really bad news that we've had so much problems here. The temple president has left and we can't pay our rent and this is happening and that's happening. The road is falling down and so on and so forth. They could be disturbed because he was like a father and he was trying to take care of all his sons and daughters. You could tell by the symptoms in their letters, even if they didn't say it directly, whether they were reading his books and whether they were getting it. In other words, say they brought up some program that was actually some kind of social welfare work rather than one of the original programs that he gave them. And he would say, why are you doing this? You should concentrate. You think you have so much time to do so many other things, but this is what I taught you. You should do this. Not these concocted ideas. So even some activity, if it wasn't something he had taught, he would see that they're not reading my books, or they're not understanding properly. That's why they're doing this other thing. That's a danger, to concoct things, to compromise. So in one sense, we always hear that a spiritual master is a very little fellow. He's the post peon, the mailman who just comes to the door and gives the mail. But it's such an important function, that deliverance of Krishna's message, that he is very important in our lives. Guru-disciple relationship, that's a mark, I can make a remark about it. It's hard to people who understand, I was saying. Maybe they have some occult idea of what a guru is. But I have a relationship with a doctor from my headache condition. He's in America, and I talk with him about 15 minutes a week. So gradually, he's been learning a little bit about me. And so then, it was about a month ago, he knew about these meetings coming up. And I was getting headaches, so at one point I decided that I wouldn't give my usual lectures in Dublin. And he said, do you want to give those lectures out of duty, or is this something you're really looking forward to? I said, oh, it's about 50-50. So he suggested I not give them. He said, what about these meetings in June? So I described that these, I checked my tongue when I was about to say devotees. I don't say words like that to him. Or disciples. I definitely wouldn't say that. So I said students. I said, well, I emphasize that they're young and I'm older. These are students that come to hear from me from England in over a 3-day period. So he said, well, is that something you like to do? And I say, yes, it is. So he's suggesting that I hold off my efforts until this took place. But it was kind of interesting how I was trying to approach with him to understand the student. And then he's also trying to understand what it is to be a guru or a spiritual master. At one point when I was in America, he was actually giving me a physical checkup. He was asking me about something or other, what I was just doing. And I said, well, I feel it's like a performance, because sometimes I feel, the different things we go through, you feel it's not really who you are, but it's a bit of a performance. I didn't mean it in some extravagant sense, but it sometimes seems to me almost everything is a performance. So I said that, and he seemed to take it in an extravagant way. He said, what is it that you're driving in a Mercedes-Benz? And they're throwing flowers at you. And then he right away he checked himself and he said, I'm sorry. He said, that was, he said, that's very arrogant of me, or something like that. I thought he had some extravagant idea, maybe from the media, of cult gurus or something. But still, he was groping wrongly for the understanding. And then we've been talking, usually we just talk about changing one medicine for another, He was talking about what pressures might operate on me, internal pressures to not live the way I am or to live differently, and external pressures like the ISKCON would want to put upon me. This isn't exactly on the topic. I don't know how I got on it. But, I know, because you were saying a few days ago when you were thinking of this meeting, I guess I was thinking of in that context, that I also have been thinking about this meeting. And and thinking of it as something I want to do. But that also creates a kind of pressure that you hope it will have a good effect on the devotees and that they'll have a good time. I've been talking about it with Uddhava also. And, you know, even the last year we had two meetings a day. And by the third day, it was time to go for the second meeting. And my secretary was Shamananda. And I said to him, I have a headache. And he was so in such bliss about going to the meeting that it didn't mean anything to him. So and he was also feeling kind of closed in by being the servant secretary. He was looking for a little more action. But later I did get a headache, and I couldn't check it, so I was kind of expressing that he should have noticed that. So this year I scheduled the meetings once a day. But I said to Uddhava, but what will they do all day long except for the meeting about an hour and a half? He said, well, they're all adults. He said, when I was in prison, we had an hour a day recreation, and the rest of the time we had to figure out what to do with it. So, but I was worried that the meeting will go all right when I'm here, and then when I'm not here. But you brought boga and pots? Pots here? You mean that are in this house? Yeah. Like in Russia, Prabhupada made sweet rice and put it in the bathroom, Lota. Moscow. He said, in an emergency, you can do anything.
We would go up and have some disciples meetings. That's what we do. We get together. And if somewhere that you had a visit, and you can meet.
Good. Thank you. Anything to say?
Yeah, I was thinking quite often I wonder how to good, when I read your books, I find it easy to think about you. When I'm doing certain services, I sometimes distribute your books and things. And I think that's that service to you. But I think when all of us are doing other services, and I guess most of us do have different services that we do that aren't directly something to do with you. It's not like books are going to distribute your books or something. How we can increase our relationship with you, how we can. Is there anything we can do to kind of dedicate that service more to our relationship with you?
You've asked me that before in a letter. Because I think for a while you were doing some typing, and then you knew. Oh, and you also said that on tapes you had heard. Sometimes there's some meeting, and someone said that, and a lot of my disciples were all together. They asked, "What can we, as a family of your disciples, what can we do for you?" Something like unified. And I said, "Well, there's this press. You can help with the books." So since I answered like that so directly, that also you might think, well, what if by circumstance I can't work on that in that way? Do you remember that I have answered that too?
But I was thinking that you were saying that you know, that actually also we give our dedicated, you know, we can do that as I've said it to you. But I was thinking more right now that when I do Buddhist studies, for example, I won't ask Krishna in the Buddhist studies, but it's through my spiritual master.
Right.
I'm kind of going to directly. But I was thinking how we can, is there anything that you can do to make that service more conscientious and more of a service to you?
Well, it is a fact that whatever we do, for whom are we doing our service? Prabhupada was also saying that to the reporter that about meditation they were saying. He was saying we meditate on Krishna all the time. So then you can further ask that, how do we approach Krishna? We don't do it directly, we do it through the spiritual master. And he accepts the offering and gives it to Krishna. So, if it's deity worship, you can deliberately, specifically, think of your spiritual master and then of him offering it to Prabhupada and him offering it to Krishna. Just the more you love a person, you'll think of that person, not that you forget him for long periods of time. It's a question of keeping something on the mind, and when you get out of practice of it, it can stay out of the mind for long periods of time. So you. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So there are ways we have of deliberately remembering Vishnu, and there are ways of deliberately remembering our spiritual master. So they may be practiced. You mentioned in our books that's a very important thing, so you can regularly, as far as possible, read them, or look at something in them, or think of something in them. Or some way, it's like we've been expressing different things. Oh, you asked me also, Dhammaratri, about playing tapes of meetings that were just for my disciples, where other devotees in the temple would hear. Maybe you didn't get my letter, but I said I didn't think it was such a good thing, because there will be so much my angle of vision. But you should at least be able to think in that way when you may be doing some other service, you're doing devotional service, but you think of it the way I emphasized the particular problems you may have, like the mental problems or physical problems, and how I've addressed them in our exchanges. They should give you some comfort so that you do think of it. Then you may think, oh, I'm not doing anything for Krishna now. Oh, but my Guru Maharaj said this. And he should be close to you by your feeling that he's accepting the offerings and giving you guidance. And certainly not that it's only some particular things that he accepts as service. But he wants his disciples to be well situated. I was thinking of this, maybe I can get a little more out of this topic of the spiritual master emphasizing different things that Prabhupada teaches. It's a fact that I am what I am, and I can't be much different than that. But I would like you to accept me where I am, and I think you're kind of like that too, that you'd like to change, but you are who you are, and you'd like me to accept you. And we work from there for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, not in a complacent way, but with these very real exchanges. Me not force, trying to force you, and you not acting in a way that you not pretending to be something that you're not. So actually, when we think of it, to choose a spiritual master, even since Prabhupada, it's quite a big decision, because there are, each one is quite different. And the devotee should think carefully before they accept a spiritual master. Well, he especially had to hear so many potential problems which I don't have to hear. He was like single-handedly managing the whole Hare Krishna movement around the world. Although he had GBC, when anybody had problems, they would jump over to GBC and ask him, and sometimes the GBC themselves were the problem. So I can't say that I have those kind of problems that he should say, anticipating a letter, the letters being read and saying, bring me good news. I think I should be ready to hear that whatever it is, and not a covered version. So, if you look at them, those two statements, one sounds like it contradicts the other. I would emphasize more that we should be honest, and if it is bad, if it is bad news to him, that we should tell it anyway. But you can tell it in a nice way, not like it's that you're insulting him or that sort of thing, but you're just expressing your own weakness, and that since the last time he's heard from you, you haven't been doing well in this way and that way. But at least for me, that's not bad, but I don't like any male accusing me of this, accusing me of that. But If you're seeking help, then that's not really bad. It's better than being silent on the subject.
I'm happy to be here.
Some
years ago, my father, focus more on the spiritual matter and try to extract that nectar from the guru. Of course, the tendency sometimes to go to the guru for like a material problem or not really more business. We can decide to extract the nectar from the guru.
Yeah. So the first thing would be to identify what is the nectar, and the nectar is Krishna Katha, talks about Krishna, and if we take up the spiritual master's time with material problems, then we don't even know what the nectar is, and we won't get the nectar. So if we are qualified and we ask for the nectar, then he can give it to us. In a very submissive way. Again, remembering this conversation with Prabhupada with the reporters, the one that I mentioned, he asked about yes, Prabhupada, are you God-realized? And Prabhupada said, why do you ask that? He said, do you know what God-realization is? And he said, no. He said, then why are you asking? If I say yes, will you accept me? And he said, yes. And Prabhupada said, yes, I am God-realized. And then a little later he said, has anyone seen Krishna? And Prabhupada said, yes, there were many. And when Krishna was present, and many saw Krishna, and since then, there are many who have painted Krishna's picture. He said, well, what does Krishna look like? And Prabhupada said, he said, the same question. He said, if you ask me, no, if I say, will you accept it? He said, yes. And Prabhupada just said it again. You will accept? He said, yes. And he said, here is Krishna. And he pointed. He said, but that's a picture of Krishna. And Prabhupada said, well, a picture of you is also a picture. And he said, but there must be someone now who has seen Krishna. And Prabhupada said, now how? You have to come through parampara. So he said, but my disciples, they've drawn, he was quoting so many verses from Brahma Samhita, describe how Krishna stands in a three-curved way, and he wears a peacock feather, and he's a beautiful bluish form. And they've taken these, I've given a little hint, and they've painted these forms. He said, but the artists may do them differently. He said, yes, Krishna is not dependent on the artist, but they're dependent on the scriptures, and they're painting him. And everyone likes our pictures. So this is an example of a person not really inquiring in a submissive way, and the spiritual master putting him off and not telling him the nectar. But it's certainly the spiritual master likes to talk about the nectar when he has submissive disciples. It can be together. Did I say about the cow that I am like the cow, or the guru is like the cow who's being milked in any different place? That you give him grass and then you can milk him and get the nectar. Krishna consciousness is also hard work. It's not always that we're
feasting. And we used to say feasting is fasting and fasting is feasting. Meaning that even when we're working for the tapasya, trying to do something, it may be difficult.
But we're doing it for our Krishna consciousness. That's also enjoyable. Because by this activity we're trying to surrender to Krishna. But the path of Krishna consciousness is has to be done in truthfulness. So my books, for example, it's not just like one nectar pastime of another from my consciousness or from Krishna's pastimes, but descriptions of the day-by-day efforts to be Krishna conscious in this world with our conditioned body and mind and senses. Are you getting my books in Australia?
We have a copy of the book on now.
Oh.
I don't know why that is actually.
Maybe.
Instead of all the books, actually,
yeah, you're way behind.
I would tell my sister, contact in India. But I'm going to get a copy.
There's a program where you can get them. Hot off the press, or because for a while we didn't know how to print the books, having a capital to produce each one, but now we've figured out a way. And the idea actually came from Manu in Ireland, but he was so eager to read advanced material, not just from many years ago. So he created a group of 10 people who called him the Greedy Readers Club. To get manuscripts right away, and they pay $100, I think, for them. And then that amount, 100 times 10, or whatever it was enough to produce these individual volumes. They're quite thin, 150, 200 pages. So now the presses are really rolling, and every 8 weeks, another volume comes out. And we're up to, I think, 6 or 7 or something like that. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 9 is about to come out. I don't know because I get advanced copies myself. I don't always know. Yeah, so, but it may be very expensive to send it to Australia. I don't know.
If you are part of the Hobart Press Club, then you are automatically subject to
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's really nice. Like
you hardly finish a book and then there's another
one coming through the door. It's an excitement always, also to see the art of. Again, you surprised us somehow. It's really nice. And then you fight over the books as well. That's the first. He sent down to Oxford to the Sun Island to the copy.
You've got all the questions. You and Bhakti Ras, Bhakti Ras.
How much it seems about you, you were quite delicate in the beginning of your presentation, talking about how the spiritual master can be nourished by his disciples, or can feel that he's existing part of this world which is unknown to his disciples, and that sometimes even this disciple might be seen is becoming more advanced than the spiritual master. I was thinking for myself that could be it can be very dangerous, especially if someone has a false ego that is pathetic as mine, that can fall into traps like that, thinking that they're very advanced and everything could be done by advanced. In order to be protected from that kind of danger, is it the case that the spiritual master might be able to think like that about his disciples, but that it would never be delivered in land, that it would be inappropriate if the disciples ever felt?
Yeah, it's not appropriate for the disciples. Yeah, it is something like that, that it would be appropriate. When Prabhupada says that, it's such extreme humility. And it's a real gem. There are a few gems like that in the purports. You don't think it's true. Oh, we like to instinctively say, oh, Prabhupada, how can you say that you're crippled and that your disciple is going to bring you back to Godhead? You don't even think that it's possible. He gave us Krishna consciousness. He's the father of Krishna consciousness. So he may say it, but we don't think it or say it. Yeah, if we did, it would not be appropriate. The other point is also a little mystical or mysterious, as I said, because it gets into knowing Krishna's intentions. He also sent me a tape, and at the time, just in Kamal Krishna Maharaj had cancer, he had several serious operations. So he must have heard that the devotees are praying for you. And then he traveled there. It was to Fiji. I heard this talk. It was like a touching talk. He said that I never thought I would come to Fiji again. And now by your prayers, I'm still all right. But now I belong to you. So whatever you want me to do, you can ask me. So he was feeling something like that, that he had received Krishna's mercy through their pleading to Krishna. The circumstances were such that it brought that topic up.
little bit in the line of Bhakti Mukta Thakur describing himself as a wicked materialist, which is obviously the devotees when they were thinking in terms of.
And saying, please pray for me. But it's true, Krishna is Krishna, and he can be touched by a prayer, sincere prayer, even of a student, of a spiritual master. He says, dear Lord, please don't take our spiritual master back yet, please. We need him here. Who's to say who can move Krishna with their entreaties? And the idea of this of the. Okay, we're talking about the disciples giving their mercy to the guru. In some ways, that doesn't seem appropriate. But then, for them to be pleasing him, that's certainly appropriate. They're doing different things that make his heart swell with pride or make him happy. And then they do these things together. They chant and feast together and spread work to spread Krishna consciousness together. So these are different, all these exchanges are going on between Vaishnavas. And sometimes they may switch. I've been reading some of these ecstatic books of a lot of ecstasy is shown in dealings among the devotees of the Chaitanya Bhagavat and also the Sri Nityananda Charitamrita, which is almost a repetition of the Chaitanya Bhagavat with the sections on Nityananda. In reading books like that, you get to see there's not much philosophy spoken in it or enunciated in it, but you constantly see how devotees act with one another and the different roles they play. And how they take part in kirtan and so on, and dealings between offenders and devotees. But sometimes these things are shown. A great personality asks mercy of a lesser personality, and others can't understand it. I should end soon.
On the same topic of disciple giving mercy to the spiritual master, I remember we were having a disciples meeting at Anuradha's house, and Narayan Kavacha was there. And I think it was Narayan Kavacha. And then I made a comment as I was talking about how you'd said you wanted to hear about my life. And I said something like, but of course he doesn't really. And afterwards, I've been shutting my mind, and he said, you know, Guruji actually really, he does want to know. You know, it's kind of, he's really happy to hear about your life, you know, to help you, and also, you know, he feels that he learns from his disciples. So I was thinking, in that sense, Lord is giving you mercy, but by sharing our lives honestly, then spiritual master might be able to disciples more and then learn from his disciples.
Like learn how they failed or how they succeeded. Say an area like dealings between husband and wife, which I have no experience of. And if I can hear something from a disciple, how they were successful, or something, then that will come to my mind as an example. So too. I gain a lot of experience of ordinary devotees' lives by hearing from my disciples how they're struggling and how they're succeeding. It's like street smarts. You get a lot of education out there in the streets. So it's quite an education to read all my mail. All the different things I find out that are going on.
Sometimes in the lectures, you have a really detailed understanding of the devotees' lives. I sometimes think, wow, Buddha does read a lot now.
Yeah. But it's not mainly for that. It's that I want to give you as an example in a lecture, something that Sridhar told me, make you an example to entertain people or something. But I do want to know your life so that I can help you. Okay, that's all. Go ahead.